This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Thank you guys every single week for showing up and putting up with the other side of the recording and this digital communication method that we've been doing. It's really fun to get the feedback from you guys on social media and via email. Every week I get one or two comments from people, so keep them coming. Before we jump into the topic, I do want to throw out, if any of you guys have some guests that you guys would like us to either bring back on the show or people that you guys think we need to be aware of to help spread the word even more about some cool restaurant technology out there, please let us know. As always, pretty much for the last year plus since we've been doing this through the middle of the pandemic, we are joined by a guest today. We are joined by Tim McLaughlin. Tim, how's it going today, man?
It's going well. Thanks for having me on, Jeremy.
So Tim is the co-founder of GoTab, but I am definitely not going to do GoTab the justice that you will, Tim. Why don't you tell our audience what GoTab is and a little bit about Tim and how you got into the restaurant industry?
Sure. So GoTab, just to be quick, is we were doing QR-based ordering long before most people knew how to scan a QR in the United States. In fact, we were doing it in 2018, 2 years before COVID hit. And the way I sort of got into this business of GoTab and co-founded it, and we actually started in 2016, because it turns out in software, you have to build the product years before you release it. we essentially were looking at what was going on in Asia, where QRs are ubiquitous and are used for all kinds of transactions, not just restaurant transactions. But, you know, been doing this since 2016, released our QR-based ordering in 2018. Lots of people thought we were crazy in 2018, 2019, and then COVID hit. And then everybody who said we were crazy in 2019 called us and said, hey, can I deploy your system, you know, in the summer of 2020?
Very, very cool. So I always love those founder-led stories where they kind of are both an operator and an operator, or you live with an operator, as we talked about at pre-show. What problem were you trying to solve before we kind of dig into a little bit of the origin story? Before I even go there, what made you think that technology is the right way to solve this age-old problem? Because restaurants have been around for a million years. You know, you didn't have the pandemic to be able to get these mobile orders in. What from your wife's restaurant and kind of the restaurants that you're in and around made you think we need to come up with a way to solve this problem? Because I think oftentimes understanding the origin of where the idea came from is always interesting to me, because I would agree with you, 3 years ago, nobody save some geeky people in the technology space really would have understood what a QR code was, nonetheless, what it could do.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So my background's it is a bit eccentric. I have yet to meet anybody in this industry who's got a similar one. I started a company in 2002. It was not hospitality. However, it was services. So I was quite used to professional services and taking care of in my business, we call them clients. And we did consulting on e-commerce and content management, and eventually grew it to 200 people. In 2012, and I sold that company. So we worked with companies like Goldman Sachs, but in the retail space, we worked a long time prior to that with Sears when they were trying to bring some competition back to the Amazon world as they were getting crushed underneath that. So we did all kinds of stuff. It was almost all Fortune 500 companies that you've never heard of that were doing $1 billion online. One of the ones we got involved with was Thermo Fisher. And they would do $1 billion in transactions every single year online. So high volume e-commerce, did that, sold it, ended up building a brewery because I've been a passionate study of food and beverage pretty much my whole life, and love to cook. I actually used to love to make beer in college. And my wife as well loves to cook and almost became a chef, actually. She's a nutritionist. And so both of us actually did own Caboose, which were now her restaurants. We started them in 2013. We started the first one in 2013, opened the doors in 2015. As you'll notice, that was actually before I started GoTab. So I was pretty involved. I was a partner there. Got Caboose open in 2015, started the second location in 2016, which opened its doors in 2018, which you may have noticed coincided with our QR-based ordering. So I moved away from running the restaurant. My wife loves that business, and she took them over in full. I merely have some opinions, which she may or may not appreciate.
I love that. Sorry.
Well, I've been married a long time, and so I've learned at least to keep my opinions to myself most of the time.
Unless asked, is kind of my opinion. I always ask if I can give my wife my opinion, and when she says no, I need to shut up and just walk away.
Well, so. But so yeah, unless asked, and sometimes even when asked, it's not really wanted. But nonetheless, GoTab was started because we just saw opportunities to maximize revenue at the same time as increasing customer satisfaction or guest satisfaction. When we opened our first restaurant brewery, we actually had substantial lines out the door. You couldn't get a table, all that kind of stuff. So we really just hit our ceiling in terms of revenue per square foot. And there wasn't a lot of ways to expand the revenue. And that's kind of what got the wheels turning when I said, hey, I know something about how to do online commerce. And I really think we could solve this payment problem, which is where we started first, was, how do you pay at the table? One of our big differences is we don't require an app. There's no app at all in all of GoTab, except on the operational side. So, and you actually still don't have to do it. You can do everything in a browser. A consumer or a guest would come in, scan a QR, immediately see a menu, and they can go all the way from menu to pay in four clicks and no typing.
Wow.
It's a very low obligation for the guest. And that was our whole hypothesis, which in 2016 was unconventional because that's when everybody was saying, hey, install this app and then you can order a beer. I'm like, wait, you lost me on install the app. Mm-hmm. So that was our hypothesis. We spent a lot of time on really tweaking that so it would work with Apple Pay and Google Pay and be as seamless as possible. And then COVID hit. So it was, it's been very interesting. Very frankly, 2020 was tumultuous and exciting and tiring.
But for lots of people, I think still is. We're recording this in March of 2021, where we're finally starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But it's been an ugly year not even an ugly year. There's lots of people that have done well, but it's been challenging to say the least, I would say, right?
Yeah. I mean, I count it almost as really three or four pivots per, for a restaurant, if you really tried to do it all. And it was hard. My wife, I watched her have to lay off a huge portion of people, and then hire them back and then spin it down and spin it up and go to takeout and then go to dine in and go back to takeout. And, it was crazy. And I mean, I think at least my wife and myself to some degree are still feeling just, tired from the whole year of effort that we put into it. And now we're starting to recover our energy back a little bit, which is nice. We actually are contemplating a vacation in the future, which is almost unfathomable. So
that's great. Well, and I'd love to go back to some of those early days, Tim, because I think it's important. I think if we would have had this conversation 18 months ago, people would have been like, what? Why do I need this QR pay? I would say, at least from a dining perspective, and I know we're talking about a pre-show. I live in California. Our longtime listeners know that. We haven't necessarily had dining rooms open for quite some time, but going back to 2016, 2017, there wasn't a whole lot of people outside of, I guess, Southeast Asia that really understood what a QR code might be and then what to do with it. Is at least my recollection of things. And I don't know that you're the first that's kind of come down that path. We had a guest on maybe 8-9 months ago that does really well-defined menus. But what is that? What was that guest experience like? And what was that staff education purpose look like? And what was the guest education looking like back in 2016 and 17? If you can go back that far and remember, what does that look like to bring on something so brand new and so novel and so different? You could see it as the visionary that's where you needed to go. But clearly, most of your guests probably didn't understand what it was at first.
No, they did not. I mean, the first 3 days that my wife opened the second restaurant brewery, which is where we rolled out ordering first, we did And up to that, we just did not have the traction. And really, it has to do with the my belief coming from sort of user experience design is that people don't really change habits based on the prospect of gain. They actually change habits to avoid pain. And that's really the only way you're going to get someone to change their behavior. And what I mean by that is what we did in 2016 is we helped them pay faster on their phone. Well, and that's all well and good. But when you already have your server available and you can flag them down most of the time or 95% of the time, you're just going to pay with a card. And so what we found is that just wasn't that compelling to change any habits. 2018 is when, so part of the reason, just to be clear, part of the reason QRs were never relevant in the United States is because the US uniquely, in most, in comparison to the rest of the world, uses iPhones.
Uh-huh.
The rest of the world uses Android phones.
So yes.
With some exceptions in Europe, but for the most part in Japan, they use Android phones. Android phones have supported QR for a very, very long time. And if you live in China, you use WeChat, which is also has built-in QR readers, and it's a given. So the reason they just didn't catch on in the US was because the iPhone didn't support it. Well, in 2018, if you were sort of studying future or development of these platforms, the QR code reader was going to be built into the iPhone in October of 2018. So being a technologist, we're aware of all the features that are coming out on all the platforms. And we're kind of like, hey, this could really change things because now we can let the guests tell us where they are immediately. They can jump directly into the menu, which is how our system works. So it knows where they're sitting, which tells us what menu we should show them or what items are appropriate and available in that place. We know where to deliver the food when they do place that order. So it becomes like a mini location system as well.
Mm-hmm.
All that was all well and good. The only problem, to your point, was no one knew how to scan a QR.
Yep.
The iPhone, rolled it out. I don't remember what version of iOS it was, but in October, which coincided with my wife's second restaurant opening, which was a massive place that had a pretty good following. So our lines got bigger. It was a popular, it was a very cool location, had lots of parking. So the lines were out the door onto the street. And as I mentioned earlier, pain is a great motivator. And when people walk up to a brand new, cool, exciting place and like, boy, I could stand in line here. I wish there was a way to not stand in line here. So what I did for the first 12 hours of the 3 days we opened is I walked up and down the line, taught people how to scan QRs on their phone. I would ask them, what kind of phone you have? Let me show you how you can scan QR. Okay, you got it. Now go grab that empty table over there because it was a counter service place. Scan the QR and order your beer and it'll come right to you. And that's what I did for 12 hours each day. It was interesting. I learned a lot of, sort of like who's going to adopt it, who's not going to adopt it is, sort of the stereotypes and the different ways to explain it to guests, because some would be into it and some would be like, no, I'm not doing that. I want to stay in line.
Uh-huh.
I mean, overwhelmingly, as you might expect, it was young people who adopted quite readily. In many cases, they already knew how to do it. They just had never seen such a solution in the United States. And you would point them to the table and they're like, sweet, I'm out. And they would walk over the line. They'd order their beer. And of course, the people sitting in line would look over and be like, how in the hell did they get a beer in 30 seconds?
That's pretty cool.
So that was really when the light bulb went off and we were doing 60% at peak time. We would do 60% of all their beverage would be sold through GoTap, which is a huge game-changing number. What we did find is that when we fell off of peak revenue, like Mondays, for example, people just reverted to their old habits, which is you walk up to the counter because there's nobody there. You tell them what you want. You order, pay with a card. There's no incentive to change your habits. So that was kind of our early learnings. It was just, hand-to-hand combat, really.
I love that. And I mean, I always love the founder-led stories where they're scratching their own itch of like, hey, here's a problem and let me figure out how to solve it. Similarly, 10 years ago or so, we had our organization developed a kiosk type solution, and it was very similar where we developed this kiosk. And again, I'm sure all of us have been into a fast food place that has a kiosk and, they've done it poorly and then they've done it well, where you can or you can't go up to the cashier if you don't want to deal with it. One of the other things that I never considered is my family happens to have a no phone at the table rule, but QR kind of has to throw that out the window, at least before you order. when we go out to a restaurant, the kids are not supposed to be on their phones because, you know, if I'm going out to dinner, I want to go have dinner with them. I don't want them to be playing on their phones all the time. But it's always kind of funny. And so how did you guys deal with any of that, if at all? You know, just because it is, you know, the hospitality experience is really about enjoying time with your friends, with your family, with whomever. But it also is, you know, the entry point, the reorder point, and the closing point are some of the real opportunities where you can ruin a guest experience if they don't come in well, and you know, you don't greet them at the front and make sure that they get sat pretty promptly and get their drinks quickly. If in the middle of their meal they're looking for something and you can't communicate with them, or you know, your server's not doing a great job, and then when they're getting ready to leave and they got to go catch a movie or they got to go catch a ball game or whatever else, and they can't pay, those, when you look at the guest experience continuum, those are really where those opportunities are. And I can see GoTab solving so many of those. But how did you get around kind of the no tech at the table or keep people engaged in the dining experience, but also enabling it with technology?
Yeah, so it's funny. We actually have the same rule in our house. In fact, we have a bunch of rules like that, like no singing at the table. Also turns out very disruptive. As much as we love our kids singing, it can stop all conversation. The interesting thing is that when everybody can order on their phones, it's actually far less disruptive because everybody can order on GoTab simultaneously, either on one shared tab or individual tabs or however you want to do it. So you actually get your order in much faster. You spend less time, you know, talking to someone you don't know. Maybe you like them, maybe you don't. A great server is a great experience, especially if it's a menu you don't know. Mm-hmm. But if it's a menu you know well, you know exactly what you want, and your settings are already saved, it's really just it's a transaction. Hey, I want this and this. And then you can turn to your friend and start talking. And it's not uncommon if you go to a restaurant with GoTab, you know, 20 seconds later, you've placed your order. And you're starting conversation. There's no, hey, where's our server, flagging them down. That said, the way GoTab works now is COVID kind of did a really interesting thing. Is prior to COVID, we were 20%, maybe 30% of revenue in the right situation, in the right setting. If you drilled into that revenue, that really was during the peak times when you didn't have enough service to go around. So like Friday night, Saturday night. You could never staff up enough without losing a ton of money for those peak times. And as a result, that's when it would all overflow into GoTab. So, and to your point, that's also when all the service problems would occur because you couldn't get a server, you couldn't get your bill, any number of things would go wrong, and GoTab would address all those. So the pre-COVID, that was kind of that's when we added our value. Now, post-COVID, what it does let you do is it lets you mix service, you know, human service with technical service, and you can go back and forth. So you can order through a server if you want to. You can open a tab through a server if you want to. You can pay with a card if you want to, but you can also start an order with the server, add to your order on your phone, pay on your phone and walk out, or just open a tab, order a beer, not pay at all and walk out because we take a card at the beginning, or you can pay with cash. So we're a full POS at this point, and you can go back and forth between self-service and staff service.
There's a couple of questions that came up in my brain while you were talking about this, and I've noticed it as part of the pandemic. So I'd love your opinion on it, and having been in the restaurant space as well. One of the things I found is as restaurants have opened up these digital channels, there's a couple of operational problems that they necessarily haven't solved. You know, everybody was striving to get sales in the door during the beginning of the pandemic because sales dropped to near zero in certain concepts as soon as the pandemic hit. And so it was like, you know what, get me sales at any digital channel, get me sales at any channel, no matter what the situation is. And I tell the story because it's true. Longtime listeners know that I've got four kids. And so mealtime is a disaster at our house. I mean, it's awesome, but it's also a disaster because I'm in the restaurant technology space and I expect certain things. And, you know, when it doesn't go well, we have a decent amount of tolerance for new things, but when I order, I expect my food to show up and I expect it to be right. I tell the story of a local Mexican place that we were there on Taco Tuesday, and they did not have flow management dealt with at all. And my argument is often you almost would be better off to just turn off the digital channels if you can. if you can, or you should be able to turn off the digital channels if you can't manage the workflow. Because this brand we used to go to twice a month or three times a month, that we are no longer going because my wife refuses, because we tried it one more time and it was such a bad experience going to this place. How have you guys managed that, or what have you seen your clients, what have you seen even your guys' own brands deal with that flow management? Because if the bartender can't pour enough beer fast enough, or if the kitchen can't cook the food quickly enough, you're delivering the opposite of a good guest experience, which is ultimately why people are going out to eat or to go drink or whatever.
Correct. Actually, that is the crux of where we really differentiate ourselves, is we run the whole kitchen. We run the online ordering, both for delivery and for takeout, and we facilitate the in-venue orderings for self-service, as well as the POS for staff-entered orders. I don't think you can manage channels well if you don't have visibility into all those channels. And let me give you a perfect example. We have a great brand that we work with called Barcelona Wine Bar. They have phenomenal in-venue service, and they're really on service. During COVID, they used us for QR-based ordering at the table, but they don't always do that. And it's something, depending on people's concerns, they would either make it more visible or less visible. Sometimes they go all QR ordering, sometimes they go no QR ordering. I think at the moment, most locations are back to the old model because that's their habit and that's their preference. But they do use us for takeout. So they use us for their takeout. And they started using us at the beginning of COVID for takeout ordering, as did some other large high volume locations, one's called Founding Farmers in the DC area. We could create a lot of volume. We can create a lot of takeout volume, and it immediately creates a conflict between takeout guests. Are you allowed to call takeout guests customers? Because they're technically not guests, right? They're not actually in, but anyway. So between takeout customers and in-house guests, and if you're Barcelona, who cares a lot about the service aspect of their business, you're going to say, well, I'm going to throttle back my takeout ordering in preference to my in-venue dining, which incidentally also has a higher alcohol component, which means it also has higher margin, right? So if you're going to clip one off, you want to clip the one that has lower margin so that you at least capture as much profit as possible. And I'm not saying they did, but that's what I would do. And so what we have within GoTab is we can take any of your different channels, as well as any of your different menus, and even all the way down to the product, and essentially say, how many orders per time interval are you willing to take from this particular channel? And that channel may be, the hotel next door, takeout from online, any delivery, and you can mix and match and set different throttle rates for each of them based on what you think the value of that channel is. That don't starve the resources that you consider to be most valuable to your business. But I can say it wasn't always that way. Early COVID, when Founding Farmers started using us for grocery service, and this is part of why the product got built this way, they were doing $500,000 a week in groceries using GoTab.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, it was insane. I mean, this is during the toilet paper shortage times.
I wonder what the history books are going to say about the toilet paper shortage, or what our kids are going to say about all of that. But sorry, I digress. I just always think about it. I think back, 100 years ago, if people were to say you're going to run out of toilet paper, they'd be like, what is wrong with these people? So sorry, it just makes me laugh when I think about it.
Oh, there's all kinds of crazy stuff. If you heard about where that myth even originated in China, it's even more fascinating. But the toilet paper shortage, where no one could get toilet paper because the majority of it goes through commercial channels, and distributed to restaurants or offices. It turns out, because offices had more than a surplus of toilet paper. But so they were taking the distributed products. Incidentally, apples were super high volume at the time as well. Like, for whatever reason, people wanted apples, but you couldn't get apples at a grocery store. And when they did that, it was all well and good. And we took all these orders and we turned our system around and we focused on takeout. Well, we hadn't really dialed in throttling entirely. And everybody, it turns out, wants to pick up their groceries at 9 a.m. So 100 cars sitting in a parking lot that was not designed for 100 cars, all trying to pick up their four boxes of groceries, probably much of which was toilet paper and apples, at the same time. So it was a hard lesson. It was interesting. There's still an operator who uses GoTab, and we learned a lot with them. But the thing is, you learn a lot of these things by doing them the wrong way, unfortunately. Uh-huh. Much like you experienced at the Mexican restaurant. That's the thing. We've been doing QR ordering for 4 years. Things work differently. Like, we take orders differently. We process them differently in the kitchen. We do what we call, internal micro routing. So we will deliver the orders to different stations based on where you're sitting in the restaurant. We will bundle orders together based on who's sitting at what table, so the runners can run them more efficiently to your table. And we'll change the sequence of making orders as well, or items, so that they can be brought out at the same time, even though the guests may have ordered independently on separate tabs and all kinds of stuff like that. So it's really hard to do this if you don't have visibility into, all things that are happening.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I think a lot of people open up those third party delivery apps and their own apps, and they when it was really just phone orders and you were walking in the door, like, it was pretty easy to manage. You had a line out the door, you knew you were going to be busy. Me as a guest, I had no expectation, if I was the 20th person in line, that I would get food in 5 minutes, because I knew I was the 20th person in line. Digitally, that's almost impossible. So it's been interesting to listen to different founders talk about how to solve this throttling problem, because it is, when it's only one or two channels, it makes it relatively simple. Whether you're talking grocery or you're talking hospitality restaurants, it's like, you go to do it, and if there's people there, then you either make a decision that I'm going to wait, or I'm going to leave, and those become a consumer decision rather than a restaurant decision, where they end up delivering a poor guest experience, and a lot of times the guest recovery ends up being a problem. The other question I was going to ask you, Tim, really is relates to POS, and you've brought it up a couple of times, because POS oftentimes is the stopgap, or is the choke point for a lot of these people, because they've got an investment in a point of sale system, whether it be a brand new point of sale system or an old point of sale system. Most of these restaurateurs are running some version of a point of sale system, anywhere from Square to Toast to Micros to Aloha to PosiTouch, you name it. There's, hundreds of different point of sale systems out there. That's what I get to do every day. But a lot of times the innovation for something like GoTab gets stuck in the, how do I manage that cash management and that workflow back to the traditional point of sale that's already got six terminals sitting in the dining room, in the server stations and the bar stations. How did you guys overcome that?
Well, we first started by integrating into the systems, and we still do in certain cases. We integrate with Micros. We used to integrate with Aloha. There's more of it's less of a technology problem, more of an agreement problem. So there's a number of different systems we can plug into. However, there are, depending on your volumes, we can oftentimes break those systems. And the reason is because so if you think about it this way, let's imagine you have a 200 seat restaurant, right? And you have five point of sale terminals where your servers take those orders and put in orders. So you basically at any point in time are putting in five orders, right? Maximum, because you have five terminals. Yep. That's all great. If you have 200 seats in your restaurant and everybody tries to order roughly at the same time because they all show up at five, you've now got, let's just assume it's half. You've now got 100 orders coming in simultaneously, on because you basically have 100 people on 100 screens on their phones, creating 100 orders simultaneously. And so if you have a point of sale that's really designed to sit on premise and process these orders on premise, there's no better way to describe it is, like, we will just choke it out of function. Like, they will stop taking orders altogether because it's not designed, and those databases aren't designed to have all of these orders flowing in simultaneously. So we learned that kind of the hard way, again, similar to some of our other learnings, is that, we have lots of ways to kind of throttle those orders and push them in, because you can't tell the guest, hey, hold on, the guy at the table next to you is putting his order in on his phone, so you have to wait on your phone. Right. Yep. So we do take those orders and we do kind of massage them to try to thread them into this relatively small pipe. But that is when we realized we ended up having to build our own system of record, which is what we are now. We are a fully functional system of record. We do, full accrual and cash accounting. We integrate into all the different accounting systems. But we are focused on all things revenue and guest to operator. And we don't do a lot of the things that people classically think of as POS. We don't do scheduling. We don't do time tracking. There's lots of great systems out there. And we said, we're going to partner for those things. And then coming all the way back around to your initial question is like, well, people have this big investment. The thing is like hardware is cheap now. And so that micro system you paid $30,000 for, most of that hardware is actually worthless. And people think it's super valuable, but I could replace those screens for $1,500, maybe $2,000. Yep. Because you can buy an Android terminal with IP65 and drop it in place. And by the way, you'll be able to walk around with it. And so that you can do a lot of things now with hardware that is virtually free when you look at it in the scheme of things. I mean, probably if you were to look at your power bill, I haven't ever done this, but just your power savings and switching from those old terminals, you know, those old Windows terminals to, you know, Android tablets is probably going to pay back for the hardware itself in the year.
Well, and I think similar to the conversation about change management, where you had to spend 12 hours a day to get people to even adopt the QR, I think that's a lot of times is that analysis, you know, paralysis analysis that owners get stuck in with, well, but I've always had it. My entire staff knows it. And, you know, they don't consider what you learned early when you guys launched this product of, you know what, you spend a few days teaching people and they figure it out and it ends up being a better experience. And oftentimes the service staff is probably really struggles with that old microsystem that they have in there.
Yeah. I mean, so many things that we do, we take for granted and I forget how hard they were. Like we have some operators who use micros integrated with GoTab and nobody can touch the menu except for their IT person. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, that's crazy. Because the way our system works, you can 86 stuff on the menu directly from the kitchen from, you know, the expo. Mm-hmm. 86 directly from the bar. So you're at the bar and you're like, oh, crap, we just ran out of Tito's, but I'm using Tito's in this cocktail. I need 86 or substitute or whatever I'm going to do. I can make those menu changes right there on that screen. They will be recorded who did it, when they did it. So you can go back and audit and make sure everything was done correctly. But the fact is, it's easy enough to use. You can distribute that. It's just a very different world. And I think, unfortunately, people, because there's so much sunk cost, they think that it's going to cost that much again. Mm-hmm. But it's just not. It's not how the economics work.
Well, and it's kind of interesting because I think historically restaurants have been pretty laggard on the technology adoption. And I am hopeful, not only because this is what I do for a living, but that really restaurateurs, whether it be through podcasts like this where they learn about things like GoTab or otherwise, that they're on that cutting edge of delivering a better guest experience because of the technology stack that they have and opening those things up. I've got a couple of last questions for you before we wrap up our call, Tim. The one question that we've heard from some of our clients is the whole idea of guest experience when you and I are sitting at a table, we both order the same item, but I get no mustard, you get no ketchup on that same cheeseburger. How do you deal with the customization both on the kitchen management side, first and foremost? Because the minute you put the option, you know, if I know that the ketchup and mustard are going to come on the side, or if I don't like tomatoes and I know that, you know, every time I come to your restaurant, it's the lettuce and tomatoes are kind of stacked together. I can just pull off the lettuce and tomatoes and I don't have to deal with it versus now I'm controlling my own guest experience. It allows for a lot more customization, which is a really positive aspect for the guest. But a lot of times the operational change management is really a challenge. And then you've got the flip side, which is the auctioning of food and or figuring out how to get Tim his burger and Jeremy his burger appropriately when the food gets run to the table. How have you guys seen both of those things manifest as you guys have been working, you know, almost 5 years now into this product?
Yeah, I mean, so we do expose options and it's really up to the, or modifiers, it's really up to the operator how they want to leverage them. So if they want to expose pickles as an option or they want to expose a free text modifier as well, they can. Some choose to, some choose not to. Oftentimes they'll put just an open text field on the whole order itself. So if someone really feels compelled to put something in, they're not inviting them quite so much to, you know, add pickles to their pancakes with a text field that's just, you know, wide open, inviting some modification. So there's a lot of different ways to slice that. And we actually haven't really heard a lot of problems with that. I guess if you were really running a fast food operation and you really didn't like modifications, it'd be a little different. But a lot of places we work with are more towards the higher end. And so it's all made to order. As far as like knowing who, if you and I were sitting down and you order a burger and I order a burger and they had different modifiers on them, all that happens is it doesn't actually really matter in our system whether we're on the same tab or not. They'll both get routed to the kitchen. If it identifies that they're going to the same table, it'll put the two orders together so that they get made at the same time, so they get brought out at the same time, and they're printed on the same running chit as well. But what it would do is it would show the name next to each order. And when you do show up at the table, if it's a self-service model, and this is self-service, not a server taking your order, it would just say your name next to the things that are coming to you and my name next to the things that are coming to me. So it would be an auction in the sense of, hey, Jeremy, and you would say, yep, that's me. And you'd put your burger in front of me.
Right. Again, half the time when I do these podcast recordings, Tim, it's for me, I love to hear how people have solved the problems because it's always so intriguing to solve it. And, you know, when I talk to our clients, some of these questions come up and I know how different products have solved them. So I'm glad that you guys have overcome some of those. The last question I have for you is really, you brought it up earlier, was really related to kind of payment and that payment interaction. So, you know, you've kind of solved the I'm coming into the door, I'm scanning that I'm at table 52. And so it kind of knows where I'm at location wise and knows whether all of us scan it with our phone or just one of us scans it with our phone and passes our phone around. However, that interaction, it feels like we've gotten through that. But now when it comes to finalizing the transaction, obviously you've got the brewery situation where four guys go out after the softball game and go and have some beers and some appetizers maybe. And then you've got my family of six that is a different experience. How have you guys overcome and dealt with the finalization of the transaction, the tipping, the closure? You know, you talked about Apple Pay, Google Wallet. Talk to me a little bit about that experience as a guest and even as a restaurateur, because a lot of fear that people have is once they go to this, now people can dine and dash and not pay for their food. And how do we deal with all of that as a restaurateur as well as a guest?
Yeah, so we don't allow, I mean, dining and dashing is not really possible on our platform. Actually, one thing I want to add that I forgot on your question around auctioning food. It's funny, I hear a lot of classic full service operators say, oh, I hate it. You know, I don't want to come to the table and say, you know, hey, Jeremy, which one of these Jeremy? I couldn't begin to name the number of times I go to a full service restaurant where they're numbering the seats and the everything comes out to the wrong seat.
Yep.
Like it's funny that they're so obsessed with like making sure it's on the right seat, but I swear to you, half the time it goes to the wrong seat.
Absolutely. That's funny that you bring that up because I didn't think about that, but you're right.
I don't know how much of a problem we're really making that we're actually naming the guest because I think most people say if you say the guest name, they tend to like it. And it avoids everybody passing the plates around after they all get dropped in the wrong seats. So sorry about that. But coming back to tabs, the way GoTab works is you can open a shared tab. So if you're going out with your family and I'm presuming one of you is paying, you open a tab on the QR, they all can join on their phones, or you can order on one phone, or you can take their orders and you can be the server and put it on your phone, or the server could come over and take your orders and open the tab on your table, meaning that you could scan and add to it. And then as far as payment, so first off, I got ahead of myself. Opening a tab always requires that you have a card on file. You cannot place an order on GoTab with self-service without putting a card on file. And we will.
Is that including using Apple Pay or Google Wallet, or do you have to have an actual PIN, you know, pinned in, typed in, card number?
So Apple Pay and Google Pay only work for non-tabs.
Okay.
Because you're right, Apple Pay and Google Pay do not allow you to separate authorization from capture.
Yep.
So getting into the tech of it, it's pretty transparent to the user. It essentially will default, especially early days, to their Apple Pay, Google Pay option because it's easier for them to use if they have it set up. If they don't have it set up, they can essentially use their stored card information. But it will prefer that once they do put a card on file because then they can open a tab with a single click. Card's already on file. We authorize the value. And then at that point, at the end, once the tab's open, it's really just, everybody can order. You can pay with a gift card. You can do partial payments. So we have gift cards. We have five other integrated gift cards. We also can take multiple payments of credit or cash. So if you were out with the four people after the softball game, you could split it, like maybe one person order the appetizers and two people could pay that down with a credit card. Or more commonly, what would happen now is you would all run your own tab and maybe you Venmo someone some money or something. So it's pretty common, like with work events or things like that, for everybody just to open their own tab and then just run that tab. And then what's also really cool with GoTab is you don't actually have to pay. When you open your tab, it'll tell you that they're going to charge whatever service charge or tips by default. And if the guest really doesn't care, they just leave. They don't close their tab. They just leave. The system automatically closes it, charges their card. If, in fact, they don't have sufficient funds on their card, it will then text them and basically chase them until they pay. And they won't be able to order again in a GoTab location until they pay down their tab.
Nice. I didn't even think about that, but I'm certain that that's something that restaurant operators worry about is that they're going to get stiffed with the bill that the guest didn't end up paying.
One thing I do have to say on that is it's funny. People always think that you're going to, have more Dine and Dash on GoTab. I would argue that there is far less Dine and Dash because most similar to what people talk about auctioning about how, auctioning's bad. I think that many GMs and many staff members will figure out a way to get rid of a Dine and Dash rather than having to explain it to their boss and get it off the list. Because I've talked to a lot of owners and say, we never have Dine and Dash. And I'm like, really? You never have Dine and Dash and you're in the city? Because that's funny. I know lots of them happening across the street. But, we actually record every single transaction. So the chances of like stuff disappearing is not really possible.
Who the guest is when they come in and if you're kind of capturing them, it's a little bit easier to kind of know and, deal with that. Obviously, yeah, every once in a while, I'm sure you guys get fraudulent cards that get put onto people's accounts, you could do the same thing if I was walking in with that same fraudulent card and handed it to my server at the same time, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you can still, use a false card and you'll get the charge back and you can deal with all the stuff there. And, depending on that sort of stuff, we still have those headaches, but you have those headaches with credit cards or even cash.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. So Tim, where do you think this whole thing is going? We talked about earlier how COVID has really, accelerated the growth of the business. It's accelerated consumer behavior. Where do you see it going? Do you see this GoTab idea where I control my entire guest experience, whether I'm on-premise or off-premise, being the way that restaurants are going to, 10 years down the road when our kids are going and dining out by themselves, where do you see this experience being? Do you see it just being an acceleration of what you already have? Do you see there even being more to what it is that we're doing from a tech front? What are your thoughts on kind of the future of restaurant technology and how GoTab is going to play a part in that?
I think it will continue to get slicker and easier. Like a perfect example is that we already integrate messaging into our ordering process. So even if you're not ordering, you can actually message directly into the kitchen or the bar and they can actually message you back over SMS. And it's transparent. It's integrated into the kitchen displays. I will say a lot of those things are actually going to get better and easier, and it will actually continue to feel more personable. So one of the things we take pride in is the fact that even though we're a technology, we find that it actually can make the experience even more personal because people actually have time to talk to you then. They're no longer like racing around trying to take your order or swipe cards or split cards or take tips, any of that sort of stuff. They can actually talk about the food. And the great operators that we work with know that and get that. And they're put people on the floor explicitly with one purpose, which is to talk to the guest about the food and the drink and how great it is to see them again and fill up their glasses of water. So I would say, the technology will continue to evolve, but I actually think the great operators are going to continue to evolve the experience in using people where they're most valuable, which is, on the softer side of things, not on the transactional side of things. I think the experience is going to continue to improve. I think online ordering will get more personal and less robotic. Again, we integrate messaging in online ordering, even for takeout. So you can deal with sort of the curveballs of, hey, I can't have this or I can't have that, or could you do this for me real time? And a lot of these things will continue to improve. And I feel like unfortunately, a lot of systems we've been forced through in COVID are quite torturous. And I think they will all, I'm sure they will all improve.
I love that. The last thing that I would add to that for our listeners out there is I think the more we know about the guests, the better off we can make the experience. And with these personalized, you know, everybody wants Amazon Easy, you know, where Amazon is suggesting what you're next. I mean, they just ordered freaking batteries for my Blink cameras around the house because they knew that one of them was dead, and they knew that I would have run out of batteries. At some point, the restaurants are going to have the data to be able to know what consumer behavior looks like, whereas today they don't. And so I think more and more people like Tim's organization and others that we've had on the podcast are going to continue to know who the guest is and what they're looking for and be able to help the operators make things better so that they can do what they do well, which is create a guest experience that's beyond reproach while taking out the menial things like running to a point of sale terminal, waiting in line behind two other servers to ring up that New York strip to send it through to the kitchen. They're going to end up doing the softer side of making sure that the guest is satisfied with the meal, making sure that they're refilling the drinks at an appropriate time, making sure that they're offering desserts, the appropriate dessert for that person, even if they're ordering it for themselves at the time and place to create that memorable experience.
Yeah, I think it's only going to get better. I actually, the other thing is I think everybody's going to make more money, which is great.
Yes.
Which is, you know, much needed after 2020.
Well, and I think way too many people say, oh, it's technology, it's going to eliminate jobs. And the truth is it's going to not eliminate jobs. It might eliminate certain portions of a job, but it's going to actually enhance and make the jobs that they're doing more valuable and better off, in my opinion. So I love the insights there, Tim. Is there anything else that you would want to throw out to our listeners out there before we wrap up and let them know how to get in touch with your team?
We'd love to talk to anybody who's interested. I do agree with you. The data is incredible that you can get out of this, and people do appreciate the insights that the data can offer. And I want to put out one quick example about that. My wife, her restaurant, one of the regulars sort of disappeared. And luckily, because as a regular, she saw it in the data and said, oh, you know, this guy hasn't been in 3 weeks, so I hope nothing's wrong. And she reached out to him. It turns out his wife had injured her hand. It had nothing to do with, you know, business or anything like that, but just that personal touch. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is someone you hope to see at the bar, and maybe you picked up on it by seeing them or not seeing them. But it's also great when the data can catch it for you and tell you, hey, you know, you may want to check. And it's being personal because you actually have the time to be personal again, which is awesome.
Yep.
It's a lot of people get scared and they'll say, oh my God, it's Big Brother. I'm like, no, it's actually not the machine. It's a human who actually has time to be human again.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. It reminds me of a story that I heard from another partner of ours where, that was on the podcast a couple weeks ago, that they had a guest that was, this happens to be a fast casual restaurant, but they were using their same credit card to buy meals for the entire office once a week, office complex or medical building. But they were also going in with their family over the weekends. And so once a week, they would buy an order for $400, bring it back to the medical office, you know, bring everybody in their lunch. But they would go in and they never really knew that that same guest was the same person. So they sent them, you know, for continuing to patronize them on their business account, they made sure that guest was feeling like they were cared for, even on the personal side, because they would come in with their family and have an order for $50 or whatever for the weekend. And I just love the idea of really being able to get into the data to understand who your guests are, especially at scale. Because I think all too often, you know, this regular that's at the bar at your wife's bar or anywhere, we all go back to those places where we feel heard, where we feel seen, where we feel loved, where we know the manager, we know the host. You know, we know that the food is going to be good because it's the people that we interact with. And being able to get back to that place, I would love for 2021, 2022 and beyond, use the enablement of technology to help create that experience that really all of us are craving, which that with that human connection and the ability to know who Tim is and what Tim's looking for. And I think the only way we're going to be able to do that is to enhance the technology that restaurants are operating with today and into the future.
Couldn't agree more.
So if our listeners love what you had to say, which I'm sure many of them will, where do they get in touch with you? How do they get in touch with you, your team, to be able to learn more about your product, dig in a little bit deeper and figure out, is it going to work for their restaurant and potentially move forward with it?
Our informational site is just gotab.io slash EN, or you can go to the bottom, hit about GoTab. If you just go to GoTab, it's essentially the transactional website. So if you go to the bottom and hit about, or at the top, I think it has something about the company. You can actually just chat with us real time. Or you could just, if you happen to be listening, you can email me. I'm tim@gotab.io.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Tim, thank you so much for your time. To our listeners, guys, we know that you guys have got hundreds, if not thousands of choices out there to listen to each and every week as it relates to restaurants and what's going on within the restaurants. So we appreciate you guys spending time with us each and every week. Go check out the GoTab website. Go figure out what they're doing, because I think Tim's on to something, and I think there's a lot of opportunity for restaurant operators out there to make their lives better going into 2021 and beyond. While you're online, go give us a rating. It helps others to learn about the podcast. Share it with your friends while you're out there. And Tim, thank you again for your time, and to our listeners, make it a great day.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.